You're listening to an event podcast from the Brookings Institution.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's a great pleasure to invite all of you today. I'm very sorry that there aren't enough seats for everyone. My apologies on behalf of Brookings that so many people are standing at the back of the room. But I think the fact that so many people are standing at the back is a testament to what an important meeting opportunity that we have today. I'm Fiona Hill, the Director of the Centre on the United States and Europe, and it's just my great pleasure and honour on behalf of the Brookings Institution to welcome here, and on the behalf of so many people here from DC, Prime Minister Aleksandar Vučić of Serbia. This meeting, and in fact your visit, could not have come at a more momentous time, I think, for Serbia and in fact for Europe overall. We've all been very much transfixed by the recent developments and in Europe. You're here in advance of the Pope as well, so we've got all kinds of things happening here in DC. I'm actually very glad that you came in advance, because we might not have been able to have this meeting had you come next week. But I think that so many visitors are coming from Europe these days with so many burning issues is just a testament to the tumultuous politics that still roil Europe. And Serbia is, of course, in the middle of all of these. And you yourself, personally and politically, have gone through the full trajectory of Serbia's recent history from the 1990s to the present day. I think in many respects, Serbia and your own political career very much encapsulates the great drama of European politics after the Cold War. If we think about the 1990s, your role as a young firebrand, very outspoken politician, actually something that you have maintained to this day, but also Serbia's own trajectory from being a country that was the focal point of concern for the European Union and is now, in fact, a candidate country for European Union accession, was the target of a NATO military campaign and is now a partner military country for NATO. This is a really dramatic trajectory. A country that is going through a very painful reckoning, and you yourself have personally been at the forefront of this with the atrocities of the past. You have not shied away from confronting these, and there has been many anniversaries of terrible events in the Balkans and Yugoslavia and Serbia that you yourself have been in the middle of commemorating and bearing witness to. And now Serbia is at the forefront of another great crisis and tragedy of refugees. I mean, just in the last 48 hours, we've had the images of Hungary, your neighbouring country, literally throwing up barriers and gates across roads and railroads, barring the flux of refugees from another great war right on the borders of Europe in Syria, of people trying to move north and into other parts of Europe. And Serbia is in the middle of this. And you also find yourself in the chairmanship of the Organization of Security and Cooperation in Europe, the OSCE, which is trying to deal with another war on Europe's borders in Ukraine, another neighboring country and a historic country that you have relationships with. And of course, a very complicated relationship that Serbia has with one of the other players in that war, Russia. So you have an awful lot on your plate. You have all of the domestic reforms, economic and political, that you're grappling with, lots of political controversies that you deal with on a daily basis. And we're delighted to have you here today to speak about these issues and to look forward to where Serbia is heading. You've had a whole host of meetings here in Washington, D.C. Now we have a meeting with a very distinguished group of people, both people who are intimately familiar with Serbia itself, but also your ambassador and many distinguished members of the diplomatic corps, fellow countrymen from Serbia, and many people who are very much interested in this tumultuous history as well as where things are going. So thank you so much, Prime Minister Vučić, for joining us. We look forward to hearing your remarks, and we look forward to a very stimulating conversation. Thank you.
Dear Madam Fiona Hill, distinguished guests, Your Excellencies, my people prepared, at least as you can see, two speeches for me, different ones, all done in an expert way, and I'm not going to read it out. I'll speak about Serbia's future in a way that I feel, in a way that I know, in a way that I see it, in a way that we can forecast it today. I'm very glad that I had a chance here in Washington to speak to VP Biden and to the State Secretary Kerry and to a number of congressmen and senators just to express the Serbia's attitude, Serbia's position, Serbia's stance on the most important issues. And we don't act in a way, and we do not pretend to be a big and important country. We do take care of ourselves, of our local problems. But as you said, dear Fiona, we are always in the middle of, unfortunately, global problems. And we cannot miss any single problem. We didn't do it in our past, and if you analyze from the First Balkan Wars from 1912 and then Second Balkan War, First World War, Second World War, and all the other wars from 1990s, I think that we were the world champions in number of wars we launched. And we lost a lot of our people. We lost almost a half of our male population. And today it's time, and that was the reason I started with these facts. Today is time to change our attitude, to change our position, and to reposition Serbia in a different way. We want to skip troubles in the future. We want to be a peaceful, democratic state. And our strategic goal, which is the most important for us, is to become an EU member state, which means to launch very harsh, very difficult political reforms. We have already started with our economic reforms. We were, after terrible floods we faced with last year, we started with these economic reforms with, in accordance with an IMF, World Bank, EBRD, and all the others. They supported us a lot, and we got an arrangement with an IMF. We passed right now that second revision with the best grades, and we succeeded. We have taken fiscal consolidation measures, which means that we cut our public wages and pensions, and we succeeded to cut our fiscal deficit from 6.6%, speaking about our governmental budget deficit, to less than 1.5%, which is twice below Maastricht level, which is a huge, enormously big result that this government delivered on. And also we succeeded combining with these fiscal consolidation measures to improve our growth rate and to have it in a positive way, to have plus 1.1, plus 1.2 till the end of 2015, with a forecast of an IMF and World Bank to be 1.5 and more than 2%, and I dare to say it's going to be bigger than that in 2016 and 2017, which is a good foreseen for Serbia, and it's a kind of turnaround after years of recession and years of terribly big fiscal deficit and terrible trajectory of our public debt. But I'm starting with this because I'm not afraid of harsh economic measures that we'll have to take in the future. We still have to restructure our SOEs. We still have to finalize the process of privatization. We'll still need to change our working habits, and we'll still have to work a lot on creating real entrepreneurial spirit in our country, which we lost in 1960s, 1970s, and in 1990s as well. And this is something that we can handle. This is something that we can courageously deliver on and provide into deeds. What I'm afraid of, it's something that we cannot control. It's an atmosphere, even within EU. It's a situation in the region that you cannot always influence in a way you want. And that's the reason why we invested a lot into building good relationship with all our neighbors, into reconciling and overstretching our hand towards all the others, even after some political provocations that were coming from different sides. And you'll notice even today that I'm not going to say a single bad word about our neighbors and about our colleagues from different parts of Western Balkans. On the contrary, I highly appreciate them all, and I think that we need to reach even better relationship in the future. And we did succeed on some important issues. We resumed a dialogue with Pristina, and we agreed on four. We finally managed to agree on four difficult arrangements regarding telecommunications, energy sector, that Kosovska Mitrovica bridge, and Serb community issue. Still, we'll have to work together on it and to make a real progress. And there are no winners on that, because you're not going to hear that, yeah, we beat them on that, you know, we did something good for ourselves and it was very bad for the other side. No, it's a kind of compromise. It's a kind of concessions that both sides made it, and I think that we'll have to carry on in the same way in the future. And I'm not afraid of that relationship, and I'm not afraid, not because it's an ideal situation between Belgrade and Pristina, it's not. But I don't see big problems among ourselves and between ourselves. I see more problems in and within some countries, within some other countries in that region, and we'll do our best to boost stability of those countries, particularly when I say that I think about Bosnia, and you know that we do recognize territorial integrity and sovereignty of Bosnian state, although we like Republika Srpska, but we, I think, invested a lot of our time and a lot of our efforts to build the very best relationship between Serbia and Bosnia, and I think that very soon we'll have a joint cabinet session of two governments, and that will boost our relationship. At least I hope that it will happen. And from that perspective, during that Berlin conference and the resumption of Berlin conference, at Vienna conference, we insisted on several infrastructural projects, and which are not only good projects for our economies, of course they are, but they are good political projects. Because if we're going to build that highway between Niš, Pristina and Durres, it means that we'll have to abolish those physical barriers between, we would say, Belgrade and Pristina, you would say Serbia and Kosovo, whatever you call it. It would be impossible from our side to keep those Albanians that would like to enter central Serbia for 20 minutes to 1 hour just to get some confirmations from, written confirmations from our side. I don't know what is that all for. And for our trucks to enter territory of Kosovo to wait for 1 day or 2 days from no reasons. And I'll be working very hard with the Prime Minister Mustafa in Brussels to overcome these bumps on the roads. And I do it from the very selfish reasons. That's very important for Serbia, that's very important for Serbian people, that's very important for the Serbs in Kosovo. And I think that's very important for Albanians. And I spoke to their president of Chamber of Commerce, Mr. Gudjaliu. He was very keen and very eager to see the progress in that way. And I would like to see Air Serbia's planes landing and taking off from the Pristina's airport as well, because it's the best national carrier in the region today. And we're going to establish that flight to New York, and we can't pack that airplane only with the Serbs. We need Albanians to make this line profitable. And that's my way of thinking, sorry to say that. And I think it is very normal to admit it and to use it to create better relationship. And to get back to that migrant crisis that you were mentioning at last, I think that we dealt with that issue in a real European way, that We delivered in the best sense of these words. Real tolerance, real solidarity to those refugees that are running away from terrible war in Syria. And I think that from the very beginning, Europe was not ready for all the difficulties that were very obvious that we would face with. And even today, I'm not sure whether all the EU countries will accept Merkel-Feynman's plan and their ideas, which we do support on that very important session on 22nd of September, but we'll still have to wait for 6-7 more days, which is obviously inevitable for us, but it will also create a lot more problem for Serbia, because today we faced very unpleasant events at the border with Hungary. I'm not going to accuse anybody, because we would like to preserve the best possible relationship with our Hungarian colleagues. And we have a very good relationship. And not only that, we have a big Hungarian minority in our country. And we want them to feel a part of our society. And that's another reason why we would like to preserve very good relationship with Hungarian government. But they fired a tear gas at our territory against those migrants, and it was a chaotic situation, and I hope that we'll be able to act calmly and responsibly, and that we'll be able to overcome this situation. But what we need, it's a comprehensive European solution. We need a comprehensive solution that will be accepted by all EU and non-EU countries. Otherwise, we would face a kind of humanitarian disaster, and not only humanitarian, but political disaster. I think that if you see the reactions from different countries, that country is withdrawing their ambassador from another country, and vice versa, and it's happening in a way that was not happening for many years. And I hope that ratio will prevail and people will understand that we need to act together. And that's the only way that we can overcome all the obstacles, all the hurdles on our way to normal life. We have to, in a way, accept those people, and we are ready as Serbia. And someone would say, well, it's easy for you to say because those people use your country just as a transit country. And I would say to you that I said to Angela Merkel and to all the others that we are ready to take our responsibility and our own burden and to share it with all the other EU countries. And I think that it's not selfish at all. And I think, sorry to say that we acted in a more European way that many European countries did it. And that's why I'm very, very much proud of being a prime minister of Serbia. Also, I have to say that there are a lot of reforms to be done in front of us. Economically speaking, we had a great meetings here with the president of the World Bank in Washington. Tomorrow, I'll be meeting Christine Lagarde, my minister of finance, here, and I think that they are very satisfied with our performance. And this is something that is that are good news from Serbia. And I think that good news from Serbia are the fact that Serbia is kind of anchor of stability in the region. And we did not even respond to some provocations coming from different countries from the region, because we wanted that stability more than anybody else. And I heard that from some people here in Washington. Some people were saying, well, but you know, Bosnia is not a functional state. We need to change something. But don't forget it. We have peace for 20, 21 years. That's quite an achievement. I think that longer period of peace we had just before, we had just between 1945 and 1990. Not more than that. We have never had such a long time of peace in that region, which is, in a way, quite a good achievement. And our desire is to skip all the troubles in the next 30, 40, 50 years. That would be our record. And that would be something unexpected from our side and from all over the world, you know, because no, people from our region, they want to show their muscles from time to time. And I hope that we were responsible and we are going to be responsible enough to change ourselves. What I see, and I need to be very honest here before you, because the situation is not terrific. Because if you analyze all these anniversaries, on one side celebrations, on another side commemorations, you see how fragile the situation in the region still is. But the good thing is that all of us are very much aware of terrible consequences if we would act irresponsibly. That is something of the biggest significance for all of us. And I hope that Serbia will be able to deliver in a very responsible way in the future, that Serbia today is a reliable country, because if we say something, we deliver on that. If we say something, if we promise something, we keep our word, and maybe we can postpone something, maybe we can be late on something, maybe we can delay something, but after all, we'll deliver on everything we promised. And that's the difference between Serbia today and Serbia in the past. And I'm very much really proud of that difference. And I noticed that all of our hosts are very much aware of that. And I'm not charming as all of my political predecessors. And I can absolutely agree with all of your remarks. You know, I admitted everything to my people, and I didn't hide it. I'm not ashamed of that. I was not a criminal. I didn't steal anything. I have different political beliefs. Changed it, which is very normal. There is an expression in Serbian. It's a maybe wrong, but it's still a Serbian well-known idiom that only donkeys don't change. And yes, I do change myself. I'm proud of that. I'll do that in future. I'll always do my best to learn more and to do everything the best for my country, for the region, and for Europe itself. And at the end, I hope that U.S. will consider Serbia, I cannot say, a partner country. We are too small. We are not important. But they can rely on our word. And that would be very important for us. Because, you know, all the European politicians, those guys from Brussels, they have 1 year here in Washington. And whatever we ask them about, they always say, okay, but, you know, we need to hear the news from Washington. And at least that was one of the reasons that we came here to ask for bigger support from U.S. on our EU path. And I can tell you something else. We don't seek and we don't ask for EU funds. There are a lot of countries in Europe that made a fortune from EU funds. We didn't. We got a lot of support, but it's peanuts comparing to those countries that are not acting in a European way today. And we are not seeking and we are not asking for their money. We are asking for their help, for their know-how to deliver on EU values. And that's what we are asking from our U.S. friends, and I hope and I think that we'll be able to deliver on these issues, and I'm sure that we'll be ready to join EU, when I say very soon, it's not that soon, but it won't be only up to us. I think that we'll do our homework within a few years, and after that, it'll be up to EU and up to all the others to decide on our accession. And finally, I think that Serbia is very open And I don't hide anything because I know that there would be many questions about our relationship towards Russia and towards our balanced position and I don't know, whatever you call it. We have our strategic goals, and I say it very openly, very bluntly, very frankly here in front of you. Our most important strategic goal is to stay firmly on our EU path and to become an EU member state. Yes, we would like to have normal, good relationship with Russia. We would like to have good relationship with everybody else, but I think that our strategic goal shows that it's not a kind of, because there are a lot of conspiracy theories that we are one day at that side, another day on another side. You know, I was saying that about our strategic goals in front of the President Putin twice. And tell me about the other European leaders who were saying something about it in front of the President Putin. And I said it publicly, very openly. And I'm proud to say here in Washington that we would like to have also a good relationship with Russia. And as you can see, I don't hide anything. And I think that's a good position of Serbia. We are not jeopardizing anybody. We won't do it in the future. And I hope that we'll have a lot of understandings from US and European sides. And I can say that I'm very satisfied because of that. Thank you once again for listening to me, and I'm ready to respond on all of your questions. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thanks so much. We'll get the Prime Minister mic'd up, and I'll just ask you a couple of quick questions here from the stage and then turn over to the audience, and I'll try to keep tabs of who is asking questions. When it does come to your turn to ask a question, please try to keep it short, because unfortunately we only have 25 minutes left with the Prime Minister. He has to go off to other important meetings on Capitol Hill. We'll have some microphones coming round, and then please also say who you are when you ask the question. I'm going to actually ask you a question that picks up on some of the things that you said in your speech, which was, I think, very clear, very straightforward, and you answered actually a lot of the questions that I'm sure were on some people's minds. They're actually on my list of questions, and I think you answered all of them, which left me with a bit of a dilemma there. But I do have one bigger question that, you know, you may or may not want to answer about how you see the future of the European Union. Because clearly for you, the big issue that changed for Serbia, that changed the incentives and the goals and, you know, where you wanted ahead, was the perspective or the perspective of becoming a member of the European Union. And Serbia set itself on that path some time ago. And unfortunately, the European Union has been roiled by every imaginable crisis, economic crises, political crises, now the refugee crisis, which, of course, we've touched upon and is proving very difficult for everyone to deal with, and understandably so, given the scale of this. I don't think any of us could have imagined the sheer scale. We might have imagined the crisis, but not in the terms of what seems like the entire population of one country plus the region emptying out into Europe. But it's also the question of others challenging the future of Europe. And I come, you know, originally from a country that you know very well, the United Kingdom, that is questioning whether it wants to be in Europe. And there's a question of a referendum on the agenda. There's been the great crisis of Greece and Greece's future within the Eurozone and within Europe itself. As you look at Europe right now, and it remains a major goal, and it's obviously having a very important place for you in charting the path you want to go forward, are you worried about the future of Europe and that European perspective? Will Europe be there, the European Union be there when you get there? I think is really part of the question. And, you know, what can we do to make that more likely?
You know, I'm not a big guy that will take care of.
I'm not asking you to fix Europe, by the way, but just give some observations on it. Although it would be nice if you had some ideas.
Today it's very popular, Fiona, to criticize European Union, and it is very easy. Very easy task and very easy to deliver on that. And on the contrary, I would say something that will speak for European Union. When I spoke last time to Donald Tusk, he's a very modest guy, but he was saying something that was amazing and that was very true. was saying, you know, that it is becoming a kind of trend to criticize the EU about everything. But you know, those boring bureaucratic procedures, everything that we can object at within European processes and procedures, created still the best place in the world together with US. There are no other parts of the world that you can compare with European Union. And there is one question which I heard from Danish ambassador to Belgrade, and I always convey that kind of message to my people when they have their doubts, because you know that many people in Serbia are pro-Russian oriented and they don't hide it. But when you say to our people, to what type of society you would like to belong to, it's a very clear and unique response. It's a European Union or Western type of society. Mm-hmm. And it's very easy to get that response. And to be very straight and to respond to your question, I think that we are facing the deepest political and economic crisis of European Union, and I'm sure that European Union, that or another shape, will survive, and that will always be able to attract all the other countries, because it's always going to be one of the best places for the mankind. And I think that that's very obvious why we would like to stay very firmly on our EU path. And whatever might happen, you cannot ruin an EU idea, an idea of EU values, and that's what we'll stand for. Even though we didn't get so much money from EU funds, like many other countries that left EU values immediately when they faced the first difficulties.
Well, I think that's a very important response, because in many respects, the migrant crisis is a crisis of attraction. Not just a crisis of people trying to flee a terrible situation, but it's also the attraction of the place itself. And I think even
they don't go to Vietnam and Burma.
No.
Sorry to notice that. They come to European Union. And they don't want to stay in Serbia. Sorry to say that. Because we are not very attractive. I would like them to have these ideas. It would mean that we would be the most attractive country, but we are not. And we'll have to work a lot within tens of years in front of us to make these comparisons.
Well, very important point. I'll now turn it over to the audience. There's a gentleman here in the third row. If you just wait, sir, until the microphone comes, because so that everyone else can hear the question. And again, if you can introduce yourself.
My name is Branko Mikasinović, and I am formerly a member of Serbian section of Voice of America and a former university professor. Mr. Prime Minister, first of all, if I may, I'd like to congratulate you on a wonderful speech that express such a great deal of understanding and tolerance and ultimately peace for the region, for the Balkan region particularly. Now, coming to my question, how do you see Serbia handling the migrant issue, considering the position of Hungary on the north and Macedonia and Greece in the south? Thank you.
Thank you. Let me just take a couple more questions in the interest of time. There was somebody who had the hand up. Yes, here. Yes, actually, my colleague, Kemal Kirishi. Thank you.
Thanks, Prime Minister. I noticed in your talk you made references to trucks having a hard time coming through from Serbia to Kosovo. Can you reflect on what's happening to the free movement of goods through the Balkans into the European Union as borders are being closed on the border, and how that might impact?
There was another question, somebody at the very back. Waving in the crowd there. I'd like to give some people at the back. There's, I think, a lady. I can't really see in behind the camera.
Sure, two questions.
Yes, okay, good.
Very quickly, Ljiljana Komnenić, and a question in addition to the first question relating to the migrant crisis and specifically around the type of infrastructure that Serbia hopefully continues to put in place in order to make the migrant situation easier in Serbia. And the question comes from a good place, commending you to all the good work that Serbia and the Serbian leadership has done across the past few months. But considering the sheer volume, as Fiona has mentioned, as to how the crisis will continue, would love to hear as to what are the measures that will be put in place to ensure safe and positive continuation of this good process.
Yeah, I mean, all of these questions are really related to the point that you were
briefly
making about the importance of mobility as a reconciliation. So
can I add a question on migrants, please?
Do you have a question on migrants as well?
Mr.
Yes, sir,
Vucic,
please.
We saw this morning migrants being beaten and with tear gas and water cannons on the border of Serbia, which is your
not
reaction?
Not on the border of Serbia.
No, of course, on the Hungarian side of the border. Of course, no doubts on that, of course. But which is, personally, your feeling, first, as a human being, and second, of course, as a Serbian prime minister? Thanks.
Dear Fiona, may I say something to you? You know, it's like we are having this meeting in Brussels. Whatever you say about our fiscal deficit, whatever you say about our growth rate, whatever you say about regional stability in the Balkans, people don't care, actually. People care only about migrant crisis. And it's something that overwhelmed everything else. Yeah. And I wanted to add something else to you. It's not up to me. I'm a guy, small guy from the small country. But ask those guys whether they are interested in Ukrainian crisis. Mm-hmm. They would say to you, where is that Ukraine? Mm-hmm. Because they all forgot about it. Yes, sorry to be very honest. And all of you know that I'm very right about it. Mm-hmm. Which means that, and sorry that I'm very simple, I wanted to respond to all of your questions. Thank you, dear Branko. And you need to know how does it work. Those migrants, they come from Turkey to Greece. Then nobody asked them anything in Greece. And our Hungarian colleagues, they can confirm it. They can freely walk there. They are not registered in Greece. They just enter Macedonia. In Macedonia, from time to time, they land their buses and trains, and they bring them to the border with Serbia, and there are no Macedonian policemen, Macedonian servicemen, and we receive them, we accept them. And we have reception center close to the border with Macedonia, the biggest one in Preševo, and there we do registration. We do medical screenings, medical treatments. We offer them overnight or two-night stay there. We feed them. We take, for the first time, their fingerprints, and we do share these data with all the other services in the region, and not only in the region, with your services as well. We make their photos, and then those people carry on towards Belgrade and then towards Kanija. At least it used to be. Then Hungary erected that fence, that wall, that barbed wire. They don't want to accept them anymore. And it was a terrible incident today. It was a kind of clash between migrants and Hungarian police. Unfortunately, and it was not only unfortunately, it was something that I hope that will never happen again. Serbian journalists, they speak about a lady, Jovana Djurović from our state TV. She was beaten by Hungarian police. And also they fired tear gas at our territory against the migrants. Of course, they would say that migrants were attacking them from our territory. But tell me what would be our fault on that. But anyway, we will do our best to overcome these problems with our Hungarian friends, and I hope that we'll be successful in calming the situation down. Regarding that question of free movement to EU, I'm proud to say to all of you, and I don't hide even in front of Serbian public audience, that I'll invest a lot of my political efforts into abolishing those barriers between Belgrade and Pristina and between Serbia and Bosnia and all the other regions, territories, countries in the region, whatever you call it. And there is something that there is no free movement to EU because they suspended that border crossing with Serbia for 30 days, which, sorry to say, I don't understand. At least I'm very passionate when I speak about economy, that it would be, and it would be very, very harmful for both economies, and not only Serbia and Hungary's economy, but for many European economies. And it will happen the same between Romania and Hungary. It will happen the same between Croatia and Hungary very soon and some other countries. I don't know, but someone from European Union has to deal with that. Speaking about our further actions and what kind of infrastructure we're going to build regarding this migrant crisis, we are in a process of constructing new reception center in Belgrade. We'll build another one in Preševo, and we'll see, in accordance with the needs of those people, we'll build another one, because in winter time those people will stay more than 1, 2, 3 days in Serbia, when they will have to stay for 5, 7 days. They'll have to warm themselves up, and they'll have to, we'll have to treat them in a reasonable and very normal way, which means that we'll have to feed them for more than 5, 6, 7 days, and we'll do our best to deliver it in a very human way, and I hope that they will be very satisfied. And I have to say that if you ask those refugees, 99% of them will always say only good things about Serbia. And I'm proud to be a Serbian prime minister and to say that and to emphasize that here before you, my dear friends. And the last question about my feelings when I heard that, I felt it was my mistake because, you know, whenever I'm abroad, some stupidities can happen in my country. I'm just joking now, of course, but I hope that we'll overcome this terrible situation, because we would invest all our efforts to preserve good relationship with Hungarian people and Hungarian government, and I hope that we'll do it. I hope that we'll deliver on that, and it was not easy for me. And I think that Hala Gorani from CNN, she noticed that I was, in a way, frustrated. And I didn't deny it. I couldn't deny it, you know, just when you hear that someone beats your journalists, you can't react in a different way if you are just a normal man. That's what I think, and I'm not ashamed of that, and I'm not afraid to confess that. And that's it, you know. The terrible picture that Hungarian journalists did with that father and son was the most terrible picture I've ever seen, even more terrible than that picture of drowned baby drowned at the Mediterranean. Because if you analyze the face expression of that father, you would see that guy didn't believe what happened. He wanted to protect his kid. He didn't know how to do it. He wanted to punch back in a way. He didn't know how to deliver on that, because he saw a young lady. And he didn't believe that he deserved that kind of reaction. An entire tragedy of those people was seen in his eyes. And please, just watch it again to see it, you know. I'm not very emotional type of guy, or dare to say not at all, but I almost started to cry because it's not a kind of political stuff you need to sell to somebody. Just look at his face, and I saw the faces of refugees that we were seeing in our country in 1995 when they were expelled from their thresholds from Croatia and some other countries. And I hope that it will just not happen again. I know that there are many security risks. I heard that Hungarian government found some terrorists, one terrorist out of those 29 guys. It's possible, but I hope that we won't see these pictures again.
As I turn to the audience, I'll try to get another three questions in for you. But I mean, I wonder if you could reflect on the ways in which this unfolding of events can have an impact, either positive or negative, on the ongoing process of reconciliation. Because you yourself touched upon that these are the kinds of scenes that haven't been seen since the 1990s, when, of course, it was all generated internally and not coming in from the outside. And I'm sure that many people looked at that and did actually think back to that period. And the question is, you know, can that be used in some positive way of looking forward to remind people of what the dangers are of going back and to help move forward? But there was a gentleman over here had a question, and someone in front of him, and then another colleague over here, if you can bring the mic. And hopefully I'll be able to get to other questions. Both of these gentlemen here had their hands up for a while. Please.
I'll keep it short. Robert B. Croft, Office of the Inspector General at the State Department, former head of the OSCE mission in Sarajevo. I'd like to ask you about Ukraine. You mentioned it in passing. Serbia has an interesting relationship with Moscow. What kind of relationship do you have with Kiev? And for that matter, with Moldova? Mm-hmm. Is there any kind of dialogue or encouragement of dialogue that Serbia can bring to the situation? Thank you.
Thank you for asking this.
I'll quickly ask the gentleman behind. Sorry, we'll take a couple of questions and then try
I just wanted to move back to the question of infrastructure. You mentioned the road to Doris. I think another exciting project is this Belgrade-Budapest high-speed rail. An interesting facet of that is that it's supported by the Chinese, which is, you know, a story around the world, Chinese investment infrastructure. So if you could just comment on that aspect of it and on infrastructure plans in general in Serbia, what the outlook is, aside from refugee infrastructure.
Actually, as I've seen in front the ambassador of Hungary, and you know, given all the discussion of Hungary today, I think we should give our colleague, the ambassador, the microphone, then I'll turn over to another colleague here. Ambassador.
Thank you. Thank you very much for these very important and very strategic words about long-term relations between our countries. And we very much believe in that. We very much have been supportive of Serbia's foreign policy goals, including EU integration and a closer cooperation on the regional level. And we very much appreciate your efforts. It's been really a tremendously increasing and strengthening relationship on the bilateral side over the last few months and years, which is highly appreciated in Hungary as well. Unfortunately, the situation today, obviously, is one of the harshest and most difficult one in the whole region and in the entire continent. I very much appreciate your insight also and into the feelings. We have the same feelings, and it is a heartbreaking thing to see those things, those images. We have seen that journalist who's done that with that father, with the child. I think it was really shocking for the entire Hungarian society, so much so that that person was immediately kicked out of her organ, and the entire Hungarian society responded with a lot of criticism and shock to that those images. So it's not characteristic, I think, of the whole country. To the opposite, what we have seen is that a major humanitarian effort was delivered to help those people who are in need, while at the same time, and I think this is what is happening, everybody has to do their jobs. The humanitarian organizations are cooperating with the government to provide that food, shelter, medication, and even schooling for those who are in Hungary among the migrants and for the duration of their stay in Hungary. But the government also has to do its job, which is to provide for the agreements that we committed to, which is the defense of the Schengen border and the security and the registration process that we undertook to follow. It's not just the interest of Hungary to make sure that we understand who's entering the European Schengen zone, but it's a responsibility that we undertook for the entire continent. So it's a very difficult situation, obviously. But one that we could see today really calls for a very strong and close cooperation between our countries. The Hungarian border force was standing there, not hurting anybody and not doing anything in particular, but they received stones thrown at them from Serbian territory, while Serbian police guards were very few, standing and smiling, some of them, allowing for the stones to be thrown. I think, obviously, it's a very sensitive situation. Nobody is to, it's not a blame game. But I think we need to cooperate very strongly, and that is what we very much appreciate from your side. Our Prime Minister has been in touch with you on several occasions. He has expressed his understanding for the, sorry?
Even more than that.
Yes. And I think it's a very important pillar. There is nothing more important than cooperation in developing a long-term solution, which is in our common interest. We have to see also the immediate problem, which is there with the migration wave that is really humongous. I mean, it's really the amount of people who have entered Hungary just in the first 6 months equals to 6 million people at the U.S. border within 6 months. So I think, you know, the pressure is huge. And obviously, we have to cooperate. So I very much welcome your openness, and we very much appreciate your efforts in cooperating.
Thank you. I'll just there's one question from a colleague from the European Action Service, Alam here, and then I will turn back to you for your comments.
Mr. Prime Minister, my name is Ala Olyum. I'm actually just arrived, visiting fellow at the Center for U.S. and Europe here at Brookings, and also a European senior fellow. I'd like to ask you about your relations with Russia. Nobody really followed up on your offer to talk a little bit more on that question. As you know very well, as a country, as a candidate, that you're expected to align with European common foreign and security policy positions, and your alignment rate has been suffering recently, mostly because of the Ukraine conflict and the refusal to align with European policies towards Russian behavior on Ukraine. But I'm wondering also that you said that you're personally not at all ashamed of changing your policies and learning from experience. How do you find Russia as a partner? Is it a reliable partner, especially after seeing what they decided on South Stream, where Serbia had really stuck out its neck and also gone against some European common energy policies on favoring the other pipeline projects in the south, and what lessons do you draw from that instance, and how does that affect your energy security going forward? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I apologize that there won't be time for other questions, but we're very eager to hear your responses and anything else that you'd like to say.
I'll do my best to be as brief as it is possible. Regarding Ukraine, we have very good relationship with Ukraine. I spoke to the president of Ukraine, Petro Poroshenko. I think that he appreciated that conversation a lot. I did it. We do recognize territorial integrity of Ukraine, and we didn't change our position on that issue, which is very important. And they still recognize sovereignty and territorial integrity of Serbia, and we have no problems in our relationship with Kiev, with Ukraine. They are our friends. I used to have the very best relationship with the former Prime Minister of Moldova, Mr. Leanca. I met him several times. We made several telephone conversations. We wanted to establish much better relationship between Serbia and Moldova, and I think that we did it for the first time between our two countries. And we'll carry on with that in future with some other governments, and I hope that we can do it for the sake and for the benefit of both people, Serbian people and Moldovan people. Secondly, regarding high-speed railway between Belgrade and Budapest, that was our common idea, Mr. Orban and myself, and we really, I'm eager to see the start of construction works. We need to make some agreements before that 16+1 meeting in, not going to happen in Beijing, but somewhere in China. And by the end of this year, I think in November. And I think that we can, at that time, sign a contract on that. We'll have almost
the same preconditions, the same pre-terms as Hungarian side with Chinese company. I think that CRBC has been chosen by Chinese side. We'll have good terms, I think, very low interest rate with a big maturity period, and this is good news for both sides, Hungary and Serbia itself. And we are in the middle of privatization process of our telecom and airport, and all that money we're going to get, we are not going to spend to cover our budget deficit. 50% will bring back bad loans at a bad interest rate from the past, and 50% will spend on future investment projects, mostly infrastructural projects. And it's when I say that, we speak about Čačak or Predina, Požega and Požega Boljare towards border with Montenegro, which is very important road and railroad for Serbia. And also, I was also speaking about that railway between Belgrade and Sarajevo and our highway between Niš, Pristina and Durres. These are the most important. Of course, we are going to finish that eastern and southern branch of our Corridor 10 from Niš to Pirot and Dimitrovgrad, and from Niš via Leskovac to Vranje and Preševo. And this is something that we need to finish as soon as possible. Dear Mrs. Ambassador, I agree with you, you know, and you see that all the other of your neighbors are using much harsher words than Serbia. And Serbia is the only country that is facing that wall and that fence. That's because we want to invest into our friendship. And we didn't say a single bad word about any single person from your government or from your leadership, which shows that we take care of our future relationship. And it would be an easy gain for us today, but we would lose in future, and we don't want to do it. And that's why we're so cautious, why we're so prudent today, and why we would like to calm the situation down. And just please try to understand our position, because you said there were a few of Serbian policemen. Serbian policemen were there to take care of those migrants, and they wanted to attack Hungarian police. What should our police guys, what should they have done at that time exactly? To beat those guys? I would never allow it. What they needed to do, they acted in a way that was, from my point of view, a proper way of dealing with that situation. We didn't, but it's a different attitude. You do something in a way you think it's best for your country. But there is something that you're very much right. We do register those guys, but we are not a EU country. But they do not enter EU in Hungary. They do enter EU in some other countries, which have Schengen as well. And they do nothing. It's not a problem of Serbia. I was asking all of you whether you can say something about Serbia's faults. And there is no Serbia's fault in an entire case. And I just think that, I don't know, we do our best to be even in your shoes and to see what we would do on that issue. But we are in the same shoes, you know. We're speaking about hundreds of thousands of people that have already passed through our territory before they entered your territory. We saw all of them in Serbia. We have that experience. But of course you should speak to your EU friends, because some of EU countries will bring those migrants to your borders with no even registering them. But we did it. We did it. We can deliver all the data to you. We can work together in finding some bad guys, if there are some bad guys.
And we are ready for that. We are ready. My Minister of Interior today spoke, I think, twice or three times with Mr. Pinter. Because I ordered that to my minister to calm the situation down and to overcome all the difficulties. And that's what we're going to do in the future. But you cannot ask from ourselves, and that's what I said to Viktor Orban also. We cannot be very pleased with that fence. We cannot be very satisfied with barbed wire. You know what happened? I wanted just to add that, and I'm not going to bother you anymore. I visited that reception center in Kanyiža, and I was speaking to those refugees. And I asked them, okay, do you feel okay here, guys? I saw small kids. And they were saying, yeah, everything's fine, you know, although there is one exception, you know. What is that? What is that all about? And they were saying, all of them, well, we need more blankets. And I started to yell on my people. Why those people didn't have enough blankets? And my people, you know, started to drag me, you know, aside. Oh, come on, what's the problem with you? Why are you doing that? And I said, you know, but you know, they need those blankets not to cover themselves, not to cover their kids. They need to put those blankets to cover that barbed wire when they cross the border. And, you know, I cannot say that I'm very satisfied with that. I cannot say that we are very pleased to see that fence close to our border. And I'm sure that Hungarians are not very satisfied. They think that they had to do it, but I cannot say that I'm absolutely pleased with that. I would be crazy if I would say so. And that's it. But regardless of that, we'll do our best, and I want to assure you that we'll invest a lot of efforts to preserve normal, good, and for time being to make it better, if possible, our relationship with Hungary. And not to forget about Russia. We were very loyal to that South Stream project, as you know. And you noticed that in a quite good way. And we were as surprised when we heard it. When we heard that news, I was in Azerbaijan, I think, when I heard that Russians were going to abolish that project. And I said it to President Putin that it would be easier for us if we would hear that, not on TV, but to be informed in some different ways. Yes, we would like, today we get it, gas from Ukraine, from Russia, then Ukraine, then Hungary, from Beregovo we got it. And even today we were discussing that issue with the State Secretary Kerry, which is very important for us. I think that we'll do that interconnector between Serbia and Bulgaria. We need to make more of energy security for our country in the future, and we'll deliver on that. Although I'm not very optimistic on that situation, because so far I heard of one realistic solution. But I went to Azerbaijan, I spoke to Ilhan Aliyev, he said to me that there was no enough gas at Shah Deniz 2, and then we were speaking about Kirk, and there is not going to be that LNG station in Kirk, but it's going to be these flotation objects in Greece, which is also okay. We need to diversify the sources of gas supply for Serbia, and we'll be working on that. And there is nothing, there is no hidden agenda on that. Then we can compare the price of gas that we can get from Russians, compare the price that we can get from Greece or from Croatia or from some other countries, which would be a part of market economy, which we like, and that's it. And speaking about our alignment with EU decisions, we increased that for 14% since last year. And you're right, there were some decisions that we did not support. But I think that our position explained that in a very easy way. And don't force me to say that there are some countries, if they don't export their, let's say, agricultural products to Russia, they would get $1.5 billion from European Union. And we would get not even peanuts. And we need to sell our goods. And we need to earn our money, and we need to survive. And we need to take care of our people. Sorry to use these words, and sorry to be very blunt. But you know, our strategic goal is to be a part of EU. And we would be very loyal, very, very loyal EU member state. Not only when using EU funds, but when it won't be so nice, it won't be so terrific as it used to be. And I think that today all our partners and allies can rely on Serbia's word. And I'm proud to look at you and to say that, believing in every single word that I was saying to you. And thank you for this question. And sorry that I bothered you.
No, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you, Prime Minister. Well, we have to make sure that you're not late and unreliable for your next meeting. The ambassador's looking a little nervous because there's a lot of construction outside and traffic at this time, and you have to get in the direction of Capitol Hill. Thank you for taking the time to join us. Thank you for such an interesting discussion. Thank you very much to all of the audience. Thank you.